This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk. And boy, do we have a special guest today, one of my favorite authors, John Sanford, number one New York Times best-selling author, and his 23rd novel is Silk and Prey. This is the 23rd Prey book. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Hi, I'm right. It is number 23, right?
Yes.
I'm counting this morning. I'm thinking, I can't get the number wrong. He'll hate me.
it's 23.
20. Can you believe that you've written that many Prey books?
Actually, you know, when I first started out, I was hoping to, you know, get two solid books done before I moved on. So 23 is pretty amazing, actually.
You are one of the few series that I can tell people I've read and loved every one of the series.
Well, you know, my attitude toward them is that some of them are better than others, but they're kind of like children. You know, you don't you like all of them, but you realize that some turned out a little better than others did.
But I can't remember one I didn't like. I cannot remember one, and I'm not saying that just because we're promoting the book. I really felt that way. I don't feel that way about very many series. There's usually one I can say, well, that one wasn't as good, but there's not one I can think of that I didn't enjoy.
No, I'm glad you like them.
Now, Silk and Prey, this new one, it's an interesting title, first of all. I always try to think, I wonder what the next title will be. That's half the fun. What's the next Prey title going to be?
Well, I think about that quite a bit, too. What's the next one going to be? And it's been getting harder and harder to come up with something.
But Silk and Prey is such an interest. It's so different. You know, it's such a different title.
Where it came from was in the book, there's a phrase that, you know, the main villain in this is a very sleek, wealthy, smart woman, and the book refers to her as a silken Machiavelli.
Yes.
And so that's where that phrase comes from. I don't know if it's a justification for an entire title, but that's where it came from.
Yeah, I remember. I think it was on page 123, as I recall, because I was reading it the other night, and I thought, oh, there's where the title comes from, because I was curious about that. You like writing nasty women villains, don't you?
Actually, I like writing women characters of all kinds. I'm just right now, as we're talking, I am working on a draft of the new Virgil book. It's almost finished. It has to be in New York on the 15th, and what's today, the 12th or the 13th or something like that?
13th, yeah.
I've only got a couple days left to work on it. I'm doing the final cleanup of it, and it's got a main female character who's very likable, I think, and may appear in a couple more books. She's not a villain. I've always found women very interesting in a variety of contexts, and I really enjoy writing the characters.
Now, what was that villain you had? I don't know how many books ago it was that she was almost like a hit woman, and
yeah.
She was. What was her name?
Clara Rinker.
Clara Rinker. That's. I knew it began with a Clara something. I couldn't think of the name. All the names, after a while, then I'm sure the names for you get. But she was such
I
a great.
I have a lot of people when I'm doing you know, talks and stuff like that, asking me about Clara and why I killed her off. And I sort of regret killing her off now because you know, she is a pretty popular character, and I thought that maybe that could have been a spinoff like the Virgil Flowers novels. But I killed her off, and you know, she's gone, so what can I say? I really liked Clara, and I really liked her character, so.
Well, this one involves politics. This is very political. Are you a very political person?
I'm not. Well, no, I'm not, and that's actually where this comes from. It's the fact that I found the last three or four political campaigns, maybe going back to the first Bush campaign, to be pretty discouraging. The first Bush campaign against Al Gore, the second one against Kerry, the third one, you know, with Mr. Obama and John McClain.
Mm-hmm.
And even this latest one, and this latest one, you know, it's been four in a row now, and there's just no civility left. You have a feeling that you have kind of mediocre characters who have nothing in their life other than politics, and they're pushing it to the extreme. They'll do anything to win. And so I took that idea of doing anything to win, which has been kicked around a lot for the last few elections, that maybe going back to the Clinton years, doing anything to win, and I push it to the extreme. This woman will do anything to win, and that anything includes murder. So, you know, that's just where that kind of it developed from.
And yeah, she doesn't seem to care either about anybody except herself. And, it, you know, you realize it.
And I sense that from a lot of politicians, that they come before the country, that they come before anything. That they will do anything, you know, to save their positions, to save their jobs, and that a lot of them are pretty mediocre characters. I mean, they're not they get themselves elected, but you can't figure out why. And I mean, this last election cycle, we had a witch running for the U.S. Senate. A former witch, I suppose I should say. Mm-hmm. I had a pretty hard time dealing with that. I'm a very I'm what they call a squishy media liberal. I'm slightly to the left, but not very far left of center. And I see a lot of value in good politicians on both sides, but I just don't see that many good politicians anymore. I used to.
Right, and Smalls isn't exactly the most likable guy either. We kind of like him, but we kind of think he's kind of smarmy too.
Well, he is, yes.
he's not exactly somebody we could feel comfortable with. I mean, he's done some things too.
But he's the kind of guy you could probably go out and have a beer with.
Yeah.
a guy who would talk to you. But if you went out and with Terrence Grant, it would always be all about Grant. Mm-hmm. It would not be, there would not be another subject matter that you could really get into.
But that's what makes her fun to read, yeah.
I mean, she's smart, and she's hardworking, and she's qualified, and all that kind of stuff, but really, it's all about her, and nothing else comes first.
Right.
So, you know.
And she's such an interesting character to read about. That's what makes it fun. I mean, that's what makes your books fun. Your characters are so interesting, and the dialogue, and in between the dialogue, there's humor. There's a lot of humor in your books, and that's what makes it so much fun.
Well, the characters are when I'm building a book, the first thing I look for is a character. I mean, you know, when I'm first starting to work the book, a new book, I start thinking about, you know, I need a character. I need a really good villain. It's the only way that the books work. And so I spend quite a bit of time, you know, just kind of sitting around thinking over who I could do that, who I could do the character with. And the humor actually is sort of organic to the whole police. I mean, a lot of times, policemen have very funny senses of humor. And they can be pretty awful people, too, on occasion. But even awful cops generally have a sense of humor. And, because they just run into so many bizarre and strange situations that they wind up talking about these things. A lot of times there's nothing you can do but laugh, and so it develops kind of a cultural sense of humor that you really commonly find with cops.
And I would guess on a beat a lot of times at night it gets boring. I mean, it can get very boring. I mean, there must be nights that nothing happens.
Yeah, I'm sure there are, and especially in small towns. And my character Virgil Flowers does work in small towns where, you know, nothing has happened for 20 years, and then all of a sudden something happens. You've got a lot of cops running around like chickens with their heads cut off because they're basically the equivalent of a McDonald's security guard, you know, and all of a sudden they find themselves with, you know, a quadruple murder on their hands or something. So.
Well, this number 23, the Silken Prey, and I should say it's out from Putnam and all your bookstores now, came out May 7th. So, and every May we get a new Prey book, and God, what would May be like without a Prey book?
Well, this May is actually going to have
Dan Brown, you mean?
Dan Brown book coming out next week, which is going to crush everything in sight in terms of sales for probably the next month or so. And that's always a bit of a bummer because you like to have that kind of free-form competition. But
the good news is he only has one every about 7 or 8 years. So.
Yeah, I don't entirely understand that, but maybe you know, the money is so strong that he really has to focus on other things in between. But
you really, see what happens. You're so good at telling stories. I mean, that's why I read your books. That's why I read them time and time and time again. The stories are always interesting. I wonder how difficult that is for you, how difficult it is for you to come up with an idea for each book.
Well, you know, the thing is that if you just look at the news, I worked with Carl Hiaasen for a long time down in Florida. And Carl has written, you know, his books in South Florida are crazy, but he made a comment once that he can't stay ahead of the situation in South Florida. He writes a book that he thinks is absolutely nuts, and something even crazier will happen in real life, you know, the following week. I mean, there's lots of material out there if you just read the news. We just had this situation with the three women who were kidnapped in Cleveland and held captive for 10 years and impregnated by the rapist. And I mean, you know, like, it's horrifying. And I would say of what, once every couple of weeks you have a situation like that. Now, I wouldn't replicate that in a novel, but I might riff on a similar situation. You know, you start with that situation, you start thinking about it, and the story just like kind of falls out of the news in a way.
Right. Do you get recognized on the street?
No.
Never.
I used to when I was a newspaper columnist, and I do sometimes in Minneapolis because I've Minneapolis and St. Paul because I've been on television there quite a bit. But basically, no. And I don't like that. I'm an observer, and I don't like it when people observe me. And so when I was a newspaper columnist, it annoyed me when people would come up and say, "Hey, you're John Kemp," because it feels backwards to me. I'm the guy that's supposed to be watching people, not the other way around. So.
Now, is this your truck on the back of the book? You always have these trucks on the back of your book.
No, it's not. That truck is owned by a guy near Santa Fe, New Mexico, who has about 10 of those trucks out in the field, and they all run. You know, he works on them and he keeps them going. And
really?
And my mother, you know, looked at that and she said, "Why are you buying an old junker? Why don't you get a new truck?" And,
Isn't that great? Well, so you have to go out to his place all the time to take pictures, or is this the same picture that you've used in the last few books?
No, I've used this picture for the last couple of times.
It's just so interesting. I mean, it's such an eye catcher, the truck.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm like the accessory or something, you know.
Do you already have an idea for book 24 in the Prey series?
Not really. I've got a lot of stuff going on right now. I'm just trying to finish this Virgil book. I've got about three or four things kicking around in my mind, and I just don't know which way I'm going to go. And I'm not going to start it probably for another month. And I just need to take a little bit of a break here and get my head straight, because I've been working pretty hard for several years in a row now on these Virgil. You know, I'm doing two books a year, and that gets tough after a while. So,
well, let's talk about Silk and Prey. That's when you first came up with this idea. Obviously, you say the ideas, you read them in the news, and the ideas come into your mind. But does the whole plot of the book come right to you, or does that happen as you're writing it?
Well, you have an idea where it's going right from the start, because she's a politician, she's running for office, and so that when you're thinking about that, okay, you think about how to start the book, and you start the book, almost all of my books start with a crime that's underway, because that gets the story going right on the first page. And so you get that crime going, and that sort of sets the tenor for the beginning of the book. And so then, after that, because I'm writing this over a period of months, I just kind of work my way through it, and I go back and forth and back and forth, and I change things as I'm moving forward. And so it's very kind of an intricate process of knitting the first 80,000 words of the book. The books are about 100,000 words long, and so that I just kind of work it out on a daily basis. What the next thing is going to happen. And I mean, you know, you have an idea that there has to be a certain amount of action and a certain amount of suspense and maybe some changes in point of view as you go through the book. And then when I get to about 80,000 words, I will outline to the end, because I want the end to come really fast, like a landslide. I just want it to start running at around 75, 80,000 words and run right into the end, which will be around 100,000 words. But the first part of it is I really sort of have to negotiate my way through it and work my way around it and think about what people would be doing and what they might be thinking at this point and that kind of thing. And then I'll find out that the book would be better if I actually went back and inserted something, say 20,000 words earlier. So then I have to go back and I have to, and that causes all kinds of adjustments that have to be made.
Well, reading this book, I want to read more with Matthew Kidd and Lauren. I love those two characters. I must confess, I haven't read the Matthew Kidd books yet, but those characters are fascinating. I know you've got people that want more Matthew Kidd books. Is there going to be another Matthew Kidd book?
No, I'm sort of saying goodbye to Kidd and Lauren.
Oh, really?
She used to be called Llewellyn, but now she's called her real name was Lauren.
Right.
I'm kind of saying goodbye to that character. You know, a lot of people liked him a lot, but quite a few of my fans didn't like them at all, and they wouldn't buy the books. I think it's because he's basically a criminal, and right now is not a good time to write about criminals. There were these Richard Stark books, which I think is Donald Westlake, about a guy named Parker, who was a hold-up man, an armed robber. And I really like those books a lot, but he did not continue that character because I think for the same reason that people just wouldn't buy them as much and were commercial writers. They did make a couple pretty good movies out of them, but using that character, for the writer they don't actually sell as well. I think
the only thing that the only criminal that really works is Dexter on Showtime. That same people just love Dexter, but I mean. But people think he's doing a good thing by killing these bad people. So I guess that's
sort of the point with Davenport to a certain extent. He may do things that are illegal, but he doesn't do things that don't lead to justice. In other words, he's seeking justice, and if he has to do something illegal to get to it, he will. And I think people now are tired of and are really unhappy about what they see as problems of achieving justice in American society. They just don't see it.
I wonder why there hasn't been a TV series of Lucas Davenport. I mean, I always thought it would make a great TV series. I know they did one with, was it Denzel Washington was in the TV movie?
It was Eric. Yeah, Eric LaSalle.
Eric LaSalle, yes.
Then they had the second one with... I can't think of his name. A football player. Harmon.
Mark Harmon.
Yeah.
Oh.
And the Mark Harmon one, which was made for the USA Network, got really good ratings for a TV movie, and everybody thought there'd be a second one, and I guess everybody was signed up, and then somebody just pulled the plug on it. So.
Oh, that's a shame.
I don't understand how all that works because I'm not that interested in movies. I mean, that's not what I do. So. I mean, I'd be happy to have another one made, but
yeah.
But
you're so good at writing. You know, writing is what is you do so well. I mean, really, really well. I mean, I can't think of very many writers that I can say everything I've read by them I love, and you know, and it's very difficult.
Well, but the thing about movies is though that again for a guy who's a writer, movies are just not. They just don't produce the income and they take a huge amount of time. So my attitude toward movies and that kind of stuff is I just let them go.
Do you have any time to do anything but writing, or is writing pretty much all you do?
That's about all I do. I've got hobbies and stuff, but I spend 4 or 5 hours a day working on the writing virtually every day of the year. Even when I'm traveling, like right now, I'm actually looking out the window of my hotel room at the Arch in St. Louis, I'm here until. I mean, tonight I'm doing a thing at the St. Louis Library, and tomorrow I'm leaving for Los Angeles. But I'm spending the entire day today working on either doing this interview, and then I'm gonna start working on editing the book. So.
Right. Now, what kind of hobbies do you have? I'm curious what you do outside of writing.
Well, I'm a painter, and
really?
That's one of the main things I do. But I also fish and hunt, and I'm pretty much of an art freak. So I live.
You seem like such a regular guy. I mean, nobody would know talking to you that you're famous.
I'm not famous, you know. I'm not a celebrity.
Well, your name is famous. I mean, you're.
Yeah. Well, but my name that I use is not my real name.
Yeah.
So, people who are celebrities are different. I have a friend who is a celebrity in a way. He's the major drive time talk show host in the Twin Cities in the afternoon. His name is Joe Souchere.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows because his face is on billboards and they listen to him talk on the radio all the time and that kind of stuff. And he is a celebrity, and I really couldn't deal with that. You know, with the fact that everybody knows you and everybody's talking to you and you're on the street. And he enjoys it. He likes the recognition and that kind of stuff. And like I said, I'm an observer.
Right.
And I like to watch stuff. I don't like that thing where...
I've always wondered what it would be like if everybody recognized me, if I couldn't even walk down the street and I got mob walking down the street, which you don't even have to worry about, which is nice. So you have the best of both worlds. You're making a nice living.
Well, the thing is that I find that the celebrity thing to be terribly distracting. I mean, I really don't like it. And you might find that too, or the other people are the other way. They love it. You know, they love, you know, having people looking at them every minute. And I think it's just your personality type, whatever it is.
To me, it's just a thrill. When I met you at the Chester County Book and Music, I'm sure you remember that day. That was years ago. But, I mean, just it was a thrill for me to talk to somebody that was so much a part of my life because I've read so many of your books. I feel like, you know what I mean? It was just a thrill to know, to be able to meet you in person, meet this person that writes these books that I like so much.
I've joined this thriller writers group, and there's a convention in New York every summer,
right.
And I went there, and every once in a while I'd get a kick out of meeting somebody, you know, that I had never seen before, and whose books I like, and the other thing I do, in addition to my other hobbies, is I read a lot. I mean, I read all the time. I read both fiction and nonfiction, and it's not exactly a hobby. It's almost like a lifestyle for me. I probably read a book a week, I would imagine. I mean, you know, I probably read 50 or 60 books a year, I suppose.
Wow.
And I've got my... I'm a fan, too. And, you know, and so I read all kinds of people who I'd like to meet and talk to, you know. So
It's amazing you have time to read 60 books with all the writing you do. Is every book fun for you to write?
No, they're not. They're a lot of work. And they're really complicated engineering things. So it's not what I'd call fun. It's what I'd call interesting, I guess.
A challenge, too. I definitely think it's a big challenge for you. Now, what do you have coming out in the fall? Do you have another book in the fall?
Yeah, that's the Virgil novel, the one that I'm working on right now.
Oh, that's the one you're working on now.
It's going to be in New York on the 15th is because they have really got to push the processing now, and it'll be out on October 1st.
Wow, what's going to be the title?
Stormfront.
Oh, I didn't realize you were working on that one for the one in the fall. I figured it was done by now. You know, writers do it so far in advance nowadays. I just figured.
No, not me. I'm really on a push cycle. I mean, I'm just you know, I've got about 4 months or 5 months before the book comes out every time. So I finished this Davenport Silk and Prey. I finished like on the 1st of January, I think.
Wow, that was only 4 months ago. Now, so you'll finish the next Lucas Davenport on about January 1st, the same time. So it's the same time schedule each year.
Yep.
Wow.
Same time schedule. I'm also working on a science fiction project with a friend of mine in San Francisco, and when that will come out, if it ever does, I don't know. But
is that going to be a book series?
No, this one won't be a series just because of the way it's set up. I mean, I'd enjoy doing a series of science books, but they would not be, you know, in a series. They would be just a group. What we're trying to do is we're trying to write a science fiction book with the least amount of fiction in it. In other words, all the physics will be real. There won't be any wormholes that will take you to interstellar space. There won't be. It'll all be engineering and trying to put. It'll all be actual physics so that you could actually argue about it. You wouldn't be able to say. You can't say, well, we'll just accept the reality of wormholes and be able to travel to any place we want in the universe. It's just going to be sort of like the engineering we have now, except that it'll be pushed for about 40 years from now.
All right, so you're focused on the West Coast now, I see. I mean, you're not in Minnesota. Do you still have a home in Minnesota?
I don't have a home in Minnesota, but I still have a cabin right across the river in Wisconsin, where I will be going, spending a good part of the summer this year, and mostly fishing and playing golf. That's my other big hobby, is playing golf. So I'll go up there time, and I'll be up there through August. And then I've already been to Minnesota half a dozen times this year. I mean, in the first 5 months of the year, I've been there almost once a month, I guess. So
it's really home.
So I'm spending a lot of time in Minnesota is what it amounts
to. So you still spend time in Minnesota. It's just,
yep.
That's great. That's wonderful. So you're just such a busy guy.
And I am running around a lot. It's getting kind of old, but I'd like to stop someplace. Maybe I'd like to take a couple college courses or something. It's hard to do if you can't spend a full semester in one spot. So
right. Will you ever stop writing, or is that just something you'll do for the rest of your life?
I haven't decided. It depends on how long my life is. Life, if it ended this afternoon, I would have spent the rest of my life writing. But I just don't know. I mean, right now the schedule's so hectic. Doing two books a year and thinking about other projects and stuff like that. I think I'd like to take a break. I'm going to be 70 in a year. So
wow, happy birthday! I had a birthday the other day, so I haven't reached 70 yet. I'll get there soon enough. You know?
Yeah.
By that time, there'll be 40 Prey books. It's hard to even imagine that many of them. Do you see an end to Lucas Davenport at all? I mean, do you know what's going to happen to him with the very last book?
No, I have no idea. I really don't. The publishers want, if Lucas ever ends, they just want it to stop.
Yeah.
In other words, they just want, a standard Lucas Davenport book, and then there are just not any others, for the very good reason that would keep the backlist going for a couple of years, 2 or 3 years of paperback sales, or 4 years even. If you kill him off, everything stops, because then everybody knows the end of the story.
Oh, I see.
And so they encourage you, not to even think about killing somebody off. I don't know what I'm going to do. I just keep writing him, I guess, until I run out of runway. So.
But the problem is Lucas is fearless. He's not afraid of anybody.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he could easily come across somebody who would just shoot him and kill him,
Yeah. I thought about that. I thought about him going down in a gunfight sometime or maybe even being shot in the back or something, and all of a sudden everything stops. But I don't think I'll do that. Like what I did with the kid character in this Silk and Prey book, mm-hmm. His kid is shown as being very successful painter, which is what he always wanted to be. He's sort of trying to getting out of the computer business. His wife, who was a jewel thief, she does one last job, and now maybe she's satisfied, but maybe she's not. We really don't know. But at any rate, they're shown as kind of getting on with her life and getting into a spot where, they've got a kid and they're married and they're fairly happy. And I just wanted to leave it at that. And that's probably, what I'll do with Davenport, too.
And Matthew Kidd is sort of a voyeur in this one, too, which is interesting, It's a very interesting scene with the cameras in their house. There's a lot of, that's what makes your book so much fun. There's something interesting in each one. There's something going on that's interesting. And I like to see what it is. Dale always comes up. And you had that shocker a couple books back, which really threw me for a loop. One of the characters, what happened to one of the characters. I won't ruin it for anybody who hasn't read the whole series, but I think you know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. That surprised me. I was sitting at a Starbucks reading it, and I thought, oh my God, what just happened? It's just, you're not expecting it. But that's some of the most fun things to read and watch on TV, when you're not expecting them.
Well, and that's also why I killed off Clara Rinker in the second Rinker book, you want, to some extent, as a strategic thing, you want the reader sometime to be upset with you. Because you don't want them to know what's going to happen to the books. They want to pick up the book a little apprehensively. Is somebody going to get killed? What's going to happen here? Things are uncertain. So, as a strategic matter, tactically, people might be upset when you kill off a popular character. But strategically, I think it's good for the series.
Right. I just wonder. I mean, we'll definitely have a Prey book next year, right? We can be guaranteed of that.
Yeah. If I live, yeah. I mean, I'm planning to start writing it around the 1st of July. So.
Well, you have to live, John. I love these books. I can't stop reading these books. the thought of not having a prey book would really upset me. I'm still upset about Robert.
You know, death would upset me, too. It's like it's a...
Would you ever let any... if something, God forbid, ever happened to you, would you ever let anybody else write the Prey series?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, I wouldn't have a choice. I'd be dead. So if my heirs...
Well, you can put it in your will, can't you?
They won't give you $2 million to let us write the Prey series. You know, then I guess somebody else would, but it wouldn't be the same. I mean, you know, Ace Atkins has been doing a really good job writing the Spencer books, but they're not exactly the same as the Robert Parker books. And I actually like Ace's standalone books better than I like his Robert Parker books. But nobody can actually... I mean, these books come out of your personality, and since another person doesn't have the same personality, it's really hard to have somebody else write, you know, books that are the same.
Nobody writes like you. I mean, seriously, nobody writes like you. I can't imagine anybody writing even close to what you write. The interesting, the fascinating, the serial killer. You know, I love all the stuff that's been in your books. Was Lucas Davenport more of a womanizer in the earlier books? I'm trying to remember. It's been
yeah, he was, and that's one of my problems is that after he was a serious womanizer, but after in the first book he had a woman pregnant who refused to marry him because you know she thought that he would not be a reliable husband, and he was a womanizer, but after about 10 or 13 or 14 of those things, the problem was that he began to look like kind of like a predator, like a sexual predator,
right.
Because he was having relationships. I mean, you know, he was not getting older at a very fast rate, and so that meant that every few months he would have a new girlfriend. And the problem with that is that the way you have to treat women in these novels is that the women have to be fairly strong and self-reliant, because that's the kind of character that your women readers want. Wow. They can't just be marshmallows and they can't be pushovers. Well, if the relationship has to be relatively sincere on the man's part, or else he really does become viewed as a predator. He can't just be purely exploitive. So how does Davenport have 14 or 15, you know, sincere relationships, one every 3 months for, you know, 4 years? And he gets to look like a predator, so then I marry him off. But the problem is that most people, most readers like to see the beginning of a sexual relationship in a thriller novel. There almost always is one. And people like that and they expect it. Well, Davenport's married now. I can't have him fooling around on his wife because that would make him into a bad guy. So I'm stuck, and that's why I brought Virgil Flowers in. He was going to be a little light relief and a guy who had a lot of kind of of women problems, but I was going to keep him in the Prey books. But then he turned out to be popular enough that I wind up spinning him off. So now I'm back to the same problem. I don't have that romantic relationship thing going on in the Prey books.
Yeah, somehow Stuart Woods gets away with Stone Barrington. Stone Barrington's a terrible, terrible womanizer. But people seem to like that in his books. It's amazing how some writers can get away with it.
Well, one of the things you do is that you... one of the things you do is that you have the guy being taken advantage of by women rather than having the guy being a predator.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
You kind of turn that around, and so then it's okay.
As long as they end up in your bed and you're not trying to take them to your bed.
Yeah.
Sort of a reverse psychology thing.
Well, that's what happens with Virgil, is that Virgil meets these women who just really like him, and then after a while they'll decide that he's not quite what they want and they'll get rid of him, and Virgil's always disappointed because he falls in love and stuff, and
Lucas Davenport's daughter too.
Yeah.
The relationship he has with Lucas's daughter is funny too. Letty.
Yeah.
That interesting dynamic between the two of them. I have a feeling something's going to happen there. But it's only a feeling when you read the books, though.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we have to let you go and get some more writing done, but it's been such a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you very much thank you very much for the interview. It has been interesting talking, okay?
Yeah, and say hello to your son for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I will. I'll pay more attention when you call him up, okay? Yeah.
We've been talking to John Sanford about his new book, Silk and Prey, the 23rd Prey novel. It's out in all your bookstores now. And this has been David's Book Talk. We'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.